the idea of having sperm, even in a clinical setting, squirted into me is not something that I'm comfortable with my identity. Mm-hmm.
And that's very important.
Really uncomfortable with that. And it goes back to that whole idea of the story I tell my kids and how they were created. I don't want any part of that story to go against my identity.
Queers, queens, and in-betweens, hello and welcome back to Same Sex, Same Shit. I'm Rochelle, and some weeks I'm joined by my incredible fiancé, Maddie, and other weeks I'm joined by powerhouse queer guests. Now, we love to chat all things lesbian, and each week we're going to be sharing that us queers do the same shit as everyone else. But better. I'll keep the intro short this week because I'm actually solo. Mads has come down with some awful viral bacterial bug infection. She got it off Mac, who got it off daycare, but she normally can handle these things pretty well. Because she's pregnant at the moment, she has been hit hard. She's actually currently on the lounge right now with sunglasses on because she can't open her eyes. But when she was pregnant with Mac at around 30 weeks, she got really sick with some viral infection and it knocked her for so long. This seems like the same thing, I guess, because she's growing a whole ass human. Her immune system is just shot. But we'll get into this week's episode. A few weeks ago, we spoke with Kayla, who is part of a same-sex couple. She shared her IVF journey on using her brother as a known donor when her and her wife Ingrid were going through their IVF journey. This week, we have Ingrid on the podcast. I spoke to Ingrid about their IVF journey as a whole. Ingrid carried all their beautiful little ones. So we speak about the IVF journey from her perspective and all the little kind of aspects that were involved in their journey. It is such an interesting one. And she really speaks on some points that I think a lot of people will resonate, or some points that people might have actually even considered going through their IVF journey as a lesbian. It's a really good episode, and let's just get into it, shall we? Ingrid, I love IVF stories. They are also different, and yours especially. It has so many little factors about it that I just think are different to any others that I've kind of heard, and I'm hearing it for the first time today too, so I'm very, very excited. Let's go back to the start. So what did the discussion look like around your IVF journey and starting that?
I think it was always spoken about between Kayla and I. So Kayla and I got together when we both sort of just turned 25. So we've been together for 8 years now, and we spoke about kids on the first date,
as lesbians do.
And I'd actually come out of a relationship that had made me, I think, a bit more cautious to like the creation of families and things like that. So I remember on that coffee date, I was like, oh, yeah, I don't know if I'd want to carry kids, even though I've always wanted to have kids. And Kayla at the time was like, oh, I really want to go through the experience of a pregnancy.
So how did you make the decision about who was going to carry?
Kayla had just started a new career. She'd just finished uni. She'd gone back to uni, started a new career, and needed to give that a bit of time. Mm-hmm. Wasn't as interested in physically carrying a pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And then because of the donor that we chose, which is Kayla's brother, our embryos, all of our embryos and children have been made from my egg and her brother's sperm, mm-hmm. all done through a clinic. So all very like clinical and separate. But even though she can, there's no clinical issue with her carrying a pregnancy, that it's, she's basically the oven for it. So mm-hmm. she can carry those embryos. There's no like incestuous issue.
Yeah, okay.
Because there's no like, it's like surrogacy. You can carry a sister's egg. You know what I mean?
Interesting.
So it's sibling donation. It's familial donation. So it's not, there's no like crossover. It's my egg mixed with his sperm yes. to create the embryo. And it could be put in to Kayla's body to yep. carry it. But the discussion was that, as I've just explained just now to another queer person, there's a little bit involved in that.
Yeah.
And it does take people a little while to process what I've just said. And even when we talk to people and say that, and we're really open that we used familial donation and that Kayla's brother is the donor for our kids, people have asked me directly whether or not that's incestuous. And I'm like, oh, I'm not related.
Yeah.
So yeah. Kayla especially felt like that might be one step further in the story we're giving our kids about their creation that we weren't entirely comfortable with yet, or society mm-hmm. wasn't entirely ready for yet. And the whole thing for us about how we've gone about creating our family and the choices that we've made along the way is we want to be really comfortable with the story that we're giving our kids.
Yeah.
So at no point along the way did we want to make a decision that made us uncomfortable or could potentially make them uncomfortable, because it's 100%. Their story.
Yeah. And I think most queer families, without sometimes even realizing, because I'm resonating so much to you with that now, and I haven't actually thought about it like that,
yeah.
is you do make a lot of these decisions based on your kids' story yeah. in the future. And because we do have these options available to us as well, which we're very grateful for.
Yeah.
And so did you have a desire to carry, obviously with Kayla's work, she was kind of a little bit out of the question.
Yeah.
And were you happy to carry?
Always. Yeah. 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 I was really, I'd already been in my career for like 10 years and I was happy to kind of almost take a little break from that. I was totally on board with carrying pregnancies. Amazing. And I was like, I'll carry all the pregnancies. And I've just touched base with Kayla multiple times over like us creating our family and been like, have you changed your mind?
Do you want to do it yet?
Do you want to carry a pregnancy? And she's not come back to me and said she wants to.
Feels that is the exact same conversation Maddie and I've been yeah. having. Maddie's like, you want to go yeah, this just, time? And I'm like, well, you did so well the first time.
It's like, I'm just checking in. Has anything changed?
Yeah.
Are you getting a desire to or whatever? And no, I don't think. I think she's watched me go through the pregnancies and is just like, yeah, nah, yeah. hard pass.
Yeah. And so you guys live in the same state as us in Queensland.
Yeah.
I mean, Queensland's a bloody huge state, but what access to fertility clinics or medical services did you have kind of around where you live?
So at the moment we're living in a regional town. Mm-hmm. We're about to move back to a metropolitan area. When we had our first child, our daughter, we were living in the metropolitan area. So we utilized the services down here, which were abundant mm-hmm. mostly.
Yep.
And then because that clinic had frozen embryos of ours, we actually did a lot of travel for subsequent pregnancies. So I should probably outline. So we've got a daughter who is 2.5 thereabouts. Mm-hmm. So we were very successful with our IVF journey.
So walk me through the initial stages.
Yeah.
So choosing a clinic, did you have kind of counseling sessions after you chose your clinic? Oh, yeah. If you want to talk about what your budget looked like, just talk me through those initial stages before any of the IUI or IVF or anything.
Yeah. So we got engaged in 2019 and we planned to get married in 2020. And we were going to get married initially in May of 2020, and then we just wanted to go straight into having kids after that.
COVID. Another classic lesbian move. Oh, and COVID, of course.
Yeah. Oh, we'd been together for like 5 years by the time we got married. So.
Oh, solid.
Yeah, we've been together
yes,
a while.
Solid.
Yeah. I mean, we traveled overseas together really quickly.
That's nice.
But during 2020, lots of things got kind of shuffled about. Our wedding got pushed back from May to December of that year. And so we actually spent 2020 kind of doing some of the pre-work for IVF. Mm-hmm. We just looked at the facilities that were available in the city that we live in. And one of the things that I found really quickly was there is a clinic that offers like a subgroup that is marketed specifically towards queer families. And I just went, you know what? I don't want to deal with any person in a clinic, whether you're the cleaner or the consultant that might not be happy with helping a queer couple make a family. So we just went, yeah, we're going to go with the pink dollar.
Yeah.
The rainbow dollar.
I think that really closes off your options as
well. Yeah, it did.
Unfortunately. And I think that's something to really highlight that was a factor in your decision making,
yeah.
which is kind of sad, when you think about it. Incredible that they had that sub branch to make you feel accepted. But in the same token, I think a lot of straight people going through a process like IVF wouldn't think twice about, am I going to be accepted at this clinic?
Yeah, yeah. They're looking at, they're like, oh, you know, I would like a female specialist or I would like a male specialist. So the clinic that we went with, we looked at that sort of queer sub branch. And then under that, you're like, what specialists are available? One male specialist. That's it. That's who you got. Mm. I did go and like look him up and I'm like, oh, he's got excellent success rates.
Yeah.
He's been around for a long time doing this. So I was comfortable with that. The thing I kept saying throughout the whole journey was I'm a woman of statistics. Mm-hmm. Like we went with what is going to get us a family the quickest. Mm-hmm. We will pay more money to skip out on things that don't have good evidence behind it. Mm-hmm. So I was like, yep, the specialist has really good rates of working with us and they're under this sub branch.
Yep.
I don't really care about your personality. I work in the medical
field. I want results.
I work in the medical field. I can be pretty assertive with doctors. So I was like, nah, I know what I want.
Yeah.
I'm going in really well informed, but I can totally understand. So a lot of people aren't necessarily in that position. So mm-hmm. you're going in and it might be the first time you've ever talked to anybody about mm-hmm. fertility treatment. And if you had that experience with, say, the specialist that we'd seen, it leaves a lot to be desired.
100%. I agree with you. Being from the medical field, I was very on top of everything that our fertility clinic and our obstetrician was saying. And I took everything with a grain of salt. And I would go back to Maddie and Maddie was like, that whole conversation went over my head. And I'm like, okay, here's the lowdown. These are our options. And like, this is what I think is the best option based on X, Y, Z.
Yes.
But we have a lot of friends who have been through it as well, same-sex couples. And I listened to their experiences and I'm like, wow, you had a decision and a choice and you didn't even realize.
Yeah.
Like you could have made a different decision, but you felt pressured into.
Yeah.
And that's for a whole nother story.
But it's a bit more emotive, I think. Like I was able to kind of go in there with like a clinician's brain as well. Like, yes, I'm like excited and I want to make my family and stuff like that. But also I'm like, there is a whole lot of money making. It's a private sector. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's a lot of add-ons and options and things like that. Oh, we'll use this and we'll use that. And there was a lot of things that I was told like, oh, we will use this. And then I was like, no, we won't.
Yep.
Or early on, actually, there was a procedure where they're like, oh, we'll do this procedure. And I'm like, we don't need to do that procedure because we're not doing IUI. Like they wanted to do a hyphosis on me. And I'm like,
okay.
Why? You're going to extract my eggs. We're going straight to IVF.
Yeah.
Like I'm not paying for that. But it's like, if you don't know, like
you don't know.
And so then I would have had this whole invasive procedure too.
Yeah.
And then it's like, it's actually don't need to do that.
Yeah. It's hard. It's a whole nother area and ball game. And I think so many people fall victim to that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So after you chose your clinic, I know that we had a counseling session.
Yeah.
Did you guys go through that?
So,
what were your thoughts on that? And how did you feel kind of before and after, I think?
Yeah. So with our counseling sessions, so we were required because we have a known donor as well. So we were required as a couple to do a session. Kayla's brother and their partner, were required to do a session on their own. And then we all had to have a session together.
Interesting.
Yeah. So we had one session in person because it was pre all the shutdowns and stuff. And then I think both the ones that like the individual one that her brother had was a telehealth one.
Mm-hmm.
And then the one we did all together was telehealth as well.
Yep.
Like a Zoom call, whatever.
Did you know about a counseling session before you went into the IVF journey?
I did.
Yeah.
I started looking at IVF around like when I was about 19. So I came out at 16, just to preface that. So I came out really young and I have always known that I would use fertility treatment.
Mm-hmm.
So I started for the cost of it. I started kind of looking it up and being medical as well. So I was pretty savvy and aware of what was going on.
What a person really to young. Go through IVF with. It's amazing.
Yeah. So I started looking at it really, really, really young.
Yeah.
I think just so that I was aware of like how much money I'd have to save.
Yeah.
over the course of time and knowing about, you know, Medicare rebates and all these different things and the changes that have happened and also just like the legalities around it.
Yeah.
You know, obviously when I was that young, I didn't know what the donor situation was going to be like when I actually got to having kids.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to understand, you know, how anonymity or de-identification and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I knew we had to do a counseling session. So the one we went to in person, it was really odd. I felt like, so I don't know if the counselor was IVF specific. I'm going to assume that she was because she was referred. She was the one that the clinic said we had to go to.
Yeah.
But I felt like I was educating her. Like it was more like, it was almost a little bit perverse. Like there was just this curiosity about us and the fact that we were also doing familial donation.
Mm.
I certainly wasn't being counseled about my feelings or thoughts or, you know, it felt a little bit like, probably a little bit discriminatory as well, because I was like, why do we have to come and do this? It's not like it's mandatory for us, but it's not mandatory for every couple.
Everyone. That's exactly how I went into it. And I was like, who does this, I was like blowing up with Maddie. I was like, who does this person think they are telling me how I'm going to raise a child? Like I'm a wanting, loving, willing parent going into like wanting to pay all this money to create a family with my partner 100%. That I love.
Yeah.
And working in the frontline medical field, I'm like, I see so many awful things. And I'm like, I want this desperately. And you're going to tell me how to, raise a kid with two moms just because, like, you know, we don't have a dad in the picture. Or I left the counseling session. I went in very closed off to the idea. I was like, this is stupid. We also had a telehealth because it was during COVID, which I preferred because I got to be in the comfort of my own home. I didn't have to see them in person. I didn't have to like travel and intentionally go to a place to have this like appointment with a person. But after it, I kind of, some of the things that we spoke through, I was like, okay, I think that like our lady was really respectful and that's she was nice. Very much like just more of an open conversation. She wasn't like, so how are you going to tell your kids that they're conceived from a donor and that they have two moms? She was kind of like, have you guys spoken about what age you would approach that conversation?
Oh, wow. And yeah, we didn't have any questions like that.
Yeah. And she it seemed like she had done it before because she was like, generally other couples that I've worked with, other same-sex couples, they find that this age is the best age to kind of tell them. And God forbid if I remember the age, but I was like, we'll work that out later. Yeah. I think I was still riled up in the session. Yeah, I was like, I'm not listening to anything you said. But afterwards I was like, I actually think I got a bit out of that session.
Yeah.
Still pissed that I had to do it, but.
No, that actually sounds like that there would have been at least some stuff to take away and have a little think about.
Yeah.
There was not a single question that I recall being asked about how we were going to talk about it or anything like that. Or maybe because, and I think this might be the case for a lot of queer families, you've given it so much thought.
Yes.
So much thought. Everything by the time you get to that point and somebody's like, have you thought about, and you're like, girl, like
I've thought about everything.
I've thought about so much stuff because I want to have a baby that's me and my partner, which is not possible.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to think and think and think and get comfortable with the idea that I can't just have, like, we couldn't just have Ingrid Kayla babies. That's what we want.
Yeah.
That's what we want.
We can't have a drunken one night stand. Oopsie, we're pregnant. Yeah. Happy days. Let's happy start days. A family.
We can't have that. So the amount of thought and consideration that has to go into it is huge.
Yes.
Because we have to come around to the idea of what is the most comfortable way we can have our family. And then it feels, I guess a bit insulting that you are required to go to a counseling session and the counselor's like, have you thought about it? And you're like, nah, I'm just coming in here and paying tens of thousands of dollars to do this and looking through, you know, if you're doing de-identified donation, like looking through these people and trying to find where you're comfortable with the donor to then just have some random be like,
no, I haven't thought about it.
Yeah,
next question.
I haven't thought about it. Then we had to do one where it was all of us. And I just think our counselor, I don't think had dealt with many same-sex couples, certainly had never dealt with familial donation.
Yeah.
And we'd all given it so much thought and already spoken at length about it.
Yeah.
We'd also, like, you can't do formal, like, legal contracts.
Mm-hmm.
They're not valid, even if you did go through a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
But we did write up a document that all four of us had gone through and seen. So we all were on the same page going into it. So all that sort of stuff had already been done pre this counseling session.
Yeah. You're like, we counseled ourselves.
Yeah. I don't even think they knew what to ask us.
So talk me through what the actual journey looked like. So did you guys do any IUI? Did you go straight to IVF?
So I like looked at the statistics of it and just went, I want as little to do with the process as possible. Mm-hmm. And my best odds of getting pregnant are to go straight to IVF.
Perfect.
So that was part of it. The other part of it is I really reject the idea that the natural way to create a family is heterosexual intercourse.
Mm-hmm.
And what's natural for me and my body is not to have sperm in it and not to have sex with males.
I love that for
it's
you.
That not that at all. So the idea
is a very cool viewpoint.
And the idea of having sperm, even in a clinical setting,
mm-hmm.
squirted into me is not something that I'm comfortable with my identity.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's very important.
Really,
and I love
uncomfortable
that.
With that. And it goes back to that whole idea of the story I tell my kids and how they were created. I don't want any part of that story to go against my identity. So for me, it was like, no, I didn't want to do that. Especially, I guess, like, it's my wife's brother's sperm.
Yeah.
I don't need that. I just don't want that process. So for me, being like, they're my eggs and they go out of my body because my wife and I have been involved in the process of injections and scans, and we're together through that whole process. I then go, I get my eggs taken out. The lovely scientists mix it all
do
up.
Do their natural thing.
Mix it all up. And then a lovely little embryo is put back in my body with my wife present.
I love that.
That whole process, that feels natural to me.
Amazing.
As a queer woman. So, yeah, I just totally reject the idea that there's...
Oh, I have goosebumps.
Really particular,
I love that. Oh, I love that idea so much.
Yeah, it's totally unnatural for me to... The idea of heterosexual sex is totally unnatural. So I don't want sperm in my body.
Yeah.
I don't want it. I don't like it.
So interesting. I wonder if, because again, like I feel like I'm resonating with you so much, but I haven't ever had a desire really to carry.
Yeah.
I still don't really, but that is conversations that we will have down the track. Because the plan always was essentially for me to carry the third if we do end up having three.
Nice. Yeah.
But yeah, at this stage, I'm still got no desire, but I do really, I don't know, I guess you've kind of put that thought in my head and I always thought we were always going to do reciprocal IVF.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think reciprocal IVF is really beautiful.
Yeah, with the third one. So I was always, because Maddie carried my embryo for our first daughter, Matt.
Yep.
And so if I was to ever carry, I would want to carry Maddie's embryo. So obviously we would have to do IVF and whatnot, not IUI. But that's a really cool viewpoint to have.
Fertility treatment, there is a lot of, and I've heard this a lot, there's this real focus, even amongst queer people I've spoken to, where it's intervention is bad and the higher levels of fertility treatment are to be avoided. And, we need to, obviously there's cost involved and that's a totally separate conversation. Mm-hmm. If you want to create a family and you can't afford to do these higher levels, then you work with what you've got.
Yeah.
But if you have the financial means and then you also, where your comfort sits in what is natural for us to make our families, then... doing IUI is totally fine if you're comfortable with it, but there's absolutely nothing wrong with completely skipping out on IUI and going straight to IVF because you're not comfortable with that IUI. Like I did,
it's your body, it's your choice. That's
I didn't want to have anything into my body. And then I also only had a male specialist, and for a lot of people, they only have the option of male specialists.
Mm-hmm.
So that added another layer to it as well, where I was like, that's a male who is working. There's just all these layers of does not fit with queer me.
Yeah.
Don't like it.
Your egg retrieval, how many eggs did you get? What does that look like? And then fertilized and embryos.
So when we did our first round was what resulted in our daughter. So we did one round. I got 10 eggs, seven of which were mature enough to be given the option of fertilization. Three were immature eggs. Mm-hmm. Of those seven, we got three day five embryos. Our daughter was best quality, was a fresh transfer, and I got pregnant straight away.
Amazing.
Which was really super fortunate. And then the other two were put on ice.
Mm-hmm.
So then we had our daughter, and then we knew we wanted to have kids close together.
Mm-hmm.
So we went back, and when our daughter was, I think it was just before her first birthday, we did a frozen transfer, which I did get a positive pregnancy from, but I did miscarry that one.
Okay.
We had an ultrasound at 5.5 weeks, which in hindsight now, I'm like, that's really early. And you get really excited. You got a positive pregnancy test. So you go in then and you can see a heartbeat sometimes, but not always, even in a viable pregnancy.
Okay.
So what they saw, they were like, oh, could your dates be wrong? And I'm like, no.
I can assure you. Absolutely they're not.
Yeah.
I've had 400 blood tests to confirm this date.
The amount of like hours that you track with hormone injections and stuff, you're like, no, I know exactly when this went in.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, look, they couldn't see a fetal heartbeat at 5.5 week ultrasound. Like, but, and it doesn't look like there's as much sort of growth in the sac as there should be, but it could still be viable. I think I already knew that I'd lost it.
Yeah.
But we had to go, I had to wait 2 weeks. So I had a second 2 week wait.
Oh my God.
Which was is there any hope that there is going to be anything? And then we went back at 7.5 weeks and there was no fetal heartbeat. So
we have shared our long journey to conceiving number two. And so Maddie had two miscarriages, the first one earlier than the second.
Yep.
So the second miscarriage was just, we weren't aware of any other option to us other than just stop taking your pessaries just let it go. And Maddie was bleeding for so long.
Oh my gosh.
We were like, when's this going to end? We wanted to do another round the following month. Yeah, that's the
thing. Often you just want to keep going.
Yeah. And they were like, no, you can't. Oh. Your hormones aren't back. She would stop bleeding for a week and it would come back. And she's like, when is this going to end? And we were left in the dark with that whole process. And then it was over Christmas time, right? So she miscarried at the end of November. And then they said, oh, even if your hormones were level, we're closed over Christmas. So you probably can't do another cycle.
Yep.
So we had to wait until the new year. But then, everything was closed. So we were kind of just like, Maddie was like, well, fuck it. I'm just going to enjoy the Christmas period. And what will be, will be. And we'll start fresh in the new year.
Yep.
But yeah, we didn't even know, like, this is the first time I'm hearing about any other option other than just wait and see
what happens.
Wait it out.
So did you go through the private system or the public system?
Private.
Yeah. Okay. I think that may have something to do with it. So within Queensland, I don't know what it's like for other states, but usually service it largely in metropolitan hospitals. So it is obviously way tougher for regional centers.
Yeah.
But if they have the option of, if there's any gynecology services or birthing services in a hospital, they will have some level of early pregnancy assessment and management service, which is often shortened to EPAMS.
Mm-hmm.
And typically, like, we've actually had somebody really close to us very recently miscarry, and I was the first person they called.
Yeah.
And so I could actually tell them what the options were.
Yeah.
So usually you'll have your ultrasound done and then they go, okay, we've got a problem. That'll go back to a specialist or a GP.
Yeah.
And then that person, that GP, will refer you on to an early pregnancy service.
Okay.
I did have an appointment with the early pregnancy service once it was all like, yep, these ultrasounds confirm. And they always confirm like on the day that you're there as well. Like, they will do a double check if you've had an external ultrasound done.
Yeah.
They will double check just in case somebody's doing, you know, missed something.
Yeah.
So they go in and they walk you through in the public system. They walk you through. You have three options. One is expectant management, which is that you allow your body to go through the process.
Mm-hmm.
The problem that often women find with that, especially if they have what's called a missed miscarriage, is if you've got no signs that you're miscarrying, like there's no bleeding, there's no cramping, there's nothing, you're hormonally, your body can still be telling you you're pregnant, but you don't actually have a growing viable fetus, which is what I had. And especially if you're on progesterone,
that's gonna
stop anything from bleeding.
Yeah.
So you can go down that path. Some women find for grieving and stuff that works really well for them.
Yeah.
Or you can have medical management, which is where you take a medication, which some people might know, called misoprostone. If you follow any American stuff, that's one of the drugs they're having big problems with because of all the abortion bans.
Yeah, okay.
So it's a drug that's an abortifacient, so it will start contractions, dilate the cervix, not like a normal period. Mm-hmm. It just increases it. The only two problems with those two ways of miscarrying is that your body may not remove all of the remnants.
Sure.
And so you can still end up going to another option, the third option, which is a surgical management. I had a DNC. My period probably came back 8 weeks later, and we did a cycle on that period.
Wow. And yep. So talk to me about that cycle. We'll finish on that cycle.
Sorry, I've talked to you so
it's
much.
So fine. Don't apologize. That was great. That's incredible information. I just learned that for the first time.
Yeah.
So thank you. And I'm sure so many other people would, because IVF journeys are such a roller coaster. Everyone's looks completely different.
So different.
We fell pregnant with Mac on the first round and then had the miscarriages going through the second round. So yeah. That was us going through it for the first time. Yeah. And yeah, so
yeah,
great so knowledge.
The yeah, so we did back-to-back rounds. It was around Christmas. So mm-hmm. My period looked like it was starting and I was like, oh, hang on. If I want to do the cycle, my period can't start for another 3 days. So I actually took some medication mm-hmm. to stop my period, to try and push it for a few days mm-hmm. to work in around Christmas closure dates with an IVF clinic, because I so wanted to just go straight into another round.
Yeah.
We chose to do a full round with that one, so egg collection and everything, because we'd considered maybe we'll have a third baby.
So you had one embryo
we
left.
We had one embryo left. Okay. So we went, well, it's the lowest quality embryo, but also if I fall pregnant on that one and we want a third, mm-hmm. I want to have a break. I'm going to come back older. Mm-hmm. So why don't we just now, while I'm young, we were always only going to use my eggs. So let's do a full round and yep. get some young embryos on ice to give us the option of mm-hmm. a third baby down the line.
Yep.
So we did a round, got 10 eggs again.
Mm-hmm. We Lucky
got,
number.
Yeah, I know. we got 8 mature ones. We ended up with 4 day 5 embryos.
Mm-hmm.
The best quality single embryo was transferred. And
I love that you put in single embryo because what happened?
Well, I got pregnant and then we went to a scan at 7.5 weeks and there were 2 heartbeats.
Oh my God.
It had split.
And so what are the chances of an embryo splitting?
What's the chance? Yeah, so in a single embryo transfer, in IVF it has a 1 in 100 chance.
Okay.
In the general community for identical twins, which is what we have,
mm-hmm.
it's a 1 in 250 chance.
Mm-hmm.
Identical twins are not the type that run in families.
Okay.
Even if you do have, we do have other identical twins in our family.
Yeah.
But it's the luck of the draw one.
Okay.
So our family's just pulled it out twice in a previous generation. There is some other identical twins. They're not sure why it happens. They think that it might be because when they're looking at the embryos, they're looking for the strongest, best growing ones.
Yeah.
And so potentially when your embryologist picks, the scientist picks that one and is like, that's the best quality one, then it's actually one that's imminently going to split. So identical twins also, there's different setups in utero for twins, for identical twins.
Yeah.
If day 0 is your day of fertilization or day 1 is your day of fertilization, they can split from any point between that day and day 12.
Okay.
After day 12 are conjoined twins.
Okay. Right.
The things you learn.
Yeah.
So twins like ours shared a placenta, but they had their own amniotic sacs.
Mm-hmm.
And they split between day 3 after fertilization and day 8. Ours was a day 5 embryo. So our very first picture of our beautiful boys is a single embryo.
Yes.
Before they'd split.
Yes.
And we know they split within 72 hours of transfer.
Wow. That is very wild and very cool at the same time.
Yeah.
And so you've got your beautiful boys now. They are absolutely divine. I love them so much. So was that from that second transfer that you had done?
That was a fresh transfer from that full round.
From that round, sorry. Yep, sure. Okay.
So there's 3 remaining embryos that we have frozen that we thought might be a third child.
Your third child.
But we got 2 in one hit.
Oh, amazing. Well, that is just the coolest IVF story ever. There are, as I said at the start, there are so many little factors from having the known donor and of Kayla's brother and then having your embryos split and having your beautiful twins. And
yeah.
I think that is just such a cool story. So thank you so much for sharing. And there are so many little gems of gold in there. And I'm sure so many people will get a lot from that story. I think the more queer IVF stories that are out there, the better.
Yeah.
Right?
So absolutely.
More that's, representation,
I'm super
the better.
Open talking about it. And I think I probably end up talking too much about it.
No, I love it. The more the better. As I said, the intricate details are what people grasp onto, because going into this journey, you really don't know until you go through it yourself or you hear other people's stories.
Yeah.
So I am so certain that there will be someone that listens to this that is going through it and they will go through a counseling session, or they'll go through their egg retrieval or whatever may happen. Yep. And they'll think back to this and be like, oh yeah, I remember them mentioning about that. It won't be super foreign to them.
Yeah. So I hope so.
Yeah. But thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you all so much for listening today. If you'd like to connect with us and stay up to date with our day-to-day life, as well as future episodes, you can do so on our socials at those.2mums. We absolutely love bringing you these conversations each week. So if you love it too, please subscribe and leave us a review. Chat to you all next week. Bye.